Looking to improve your diet in the new year? Try seeing a personal dietitian with Nourish. Nourish has hundreds of dietitians who specialize in a variety of health concerns, including weight loss, gut health, and more. Meet with your dietitian online and message them anytime through the Nourish app. Nourish accepts hundreds of insurance plans. 94% of patients pay $0 out of pocket. Find your personal dietitian at usenourish.com. That's usenourish.com.
It's no surprise that facial hair is personal. It grows from your face. Whether you're going smooth shaven or maintaining a beard, Dollar Shave Club offers shave and grooming products that are always high quality, but never overpriced. Visit DollarShaveClub.com and use promo code SHAVEUP for 20% off $20 or more.
Nerds.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Are target date funds a smart or lazy way to invest? Should you pay off debt or invest extra cash? Can you deduct your dog as a home security system on your taxes? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing strategies, tax planning, and smart ways to build wealth and navigate big financial decisions. Work smarter, not harder, on your finances this year. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
For Zy Alexander, maybe early day three, I think I could see something like that. I think if you double dip or if you miss out on your dudes, he's somebody who I think brings a very high floor. I don't necessarily know if the lack of athletic traits is going to limit the ceiling, but Azarai Thomas is someone who I think that at 30, if you don't have things go the way you want to go or in the second round, I think that the Bills could, especially if they're going to lean into more man principles, if they're going to lean into more press in 2025.
That was Bruce Nolan, who kicked off the show with us here on Sports Talk Saturday, talking about LSU corner Zy Alexander as a nice little later or middle edge prospect to say for cornerback, as well as Azarai Thomas, the corner out of Florida State. A couple of players that we talked about, and plenty more. If you want to listen to that conversation, well, that'll be on our website at WGR550.com and on the Odyssey app. Derek Kramer here with you on a Sports Talk Saturday, and I've got great news for all of the people that love their brain rot. I think we need to get ourselves back into a beautiful, wonderful mock draft simulator with the music. Why? Because, you know, it's always great to do a mock draft simulator every weekend, allowing us to keep ourselves familiar with prospects that will be hanging around at the position that the Bills will be drafting at. And there it is.
Sorry, it took
mock
a second.
Draft simulator. As the Bills are going to pick 30, I first off have decided to use a new engine. The ESPN mock draft machine does seem to be pretty nice. I don't have to pay extra for it if I want to make trades as well, by the way. So that's another one as well. I do think, though, that there is plenty of opportunity, though, for the Bills with their selection. Who are players that should be available? Who are players that you can go ahead and look at for being around there at pick 30? So, we run a mock draft simulator here. Malachi Starks going at 21. Nick Amonwori going at 23. So my dreams at safety mostly get dashed within the first round. And it's more about the players, not the position. I know that safety is not typically a position that you get a lot of investment in. But at the same time, if the position gets overvalued like that, it helps kind of bring some things down. Three quarterbacks going within the first round, by the way. The Seahawks would be taking Jackson Dart, even though they signed Sam Darnold. All right, come on now. Come on, ESPN, be better than that. So what the Bills going to get at 30? Well, let's see what we got here. Donovan Azeroku is there, the edge rusher from Boston College. So I do love that idea. Matthew Golden out of Texas at wide receiver. That sounds like one of the more popular ideas for the Bills at pick 30 would be a player like Matthew Golden. Maxwell Hairston and Azarai Thomas at cornerback for the Bills. projected to be available over here in this mock draft. Kenneth Grant, the D tackle out of Michigan as well. So there's plenty of great options here that I don't know if you can be mad at when it comes to the Bills at pick 30 here. I'm going to roll with the edge rusher from Boston College and in Isaraku for the Bills at pick 30. Why? Because pass rush is good. Bruce Nolan saying that he's bendy, a player that can really get around the edge and frustrate a lot of players. Ezra Thomas going 35, Kenneth Grant 36. I do think it's going to be very interesting that a lot of the players that we are starting to recognize, learn, and love, it's going to be tough when you see a lot of them going immediately and right away within the second round. But are we hanging out at 56? I see Benjamin Morrison here, cornerback out of Notre Dame, a player that he would have probably top 20 consideration if not for the fact that he suffered an injury and missed most of the year last year. I think he's the complete package. I've bought in on a player like Morrison here, and I do think that that's going to be a player that I would love for the Bills to select, especially at pick 56. We go ahead and we get to 62. Still plenty of options. There's a lot that you can still do with this sort of thing, and I do like the idea of an Alfred Collins here in the second round. Collins is, as Bruce and I talked about, he's a space eater, but he's also a guy that he's dismissive, Bruce called him. If he doesn't want an offensive lineman in his way, he's going to try to do everything he can to get rid of you. I do like the idea of Alfred Collins here for the Bills as well. So that would mean an edge rusher, a corner, and a D tackle for the Bills within rounds one and round two. If you get three new young cornerstones for a defense within your first two rounds, you're doing a great job, especially with a team that could use a little bit more of youth and longevity within their defense, especially at pass rusher. Pairing him with Greg Rousseau would be a great idea. The only thing is that, yeah, there's a problem with safety at that point for me. If the Bills aren't able to get themselves a capable player on the back end, well, that's going to hurt a little bit. But I also know that it's not the highest priority on their list. They can survive another year with the trio of Cole Bishop, Taylor Rapp, and DeMar Hamlin. We'll see what happens there. But mostly, I want to see the Bills get themselves that defensive line combo. Yeah, you signed Joey Bosa, but it's for 1 year. You get yourself another edge rusher that you can rotate in there? Yes, please. Get yourself a space eater so that you can free up Ed Oliver. You could free up Joey Bosa. You could free up Greg Rousseau. It gives opportunities. Because what's the greatest way to help out an ailing secondary? It's helping out your defensive line and stacking it, causing time to throw to be more of an issue. Especially if you're going to want to play more man coverage, you need that. But that's pretty much where we're at this point. We run ourselves a mock draft simulator. And again, I'm thinking in round two, Benjamin Morrison is a player that people should start to really familiarize themselves with. Either him or Iowa State's Darian Porter. Because, like, yeah, there's going to be players like a Maxwell Harrison or Ezra Thomas. They're fringe first-round guys. And if the Bills don't get a player like that, we need to start familiarizing ourselves with players in round two that could be readily available. Siobhan Revelle is another one of those guys, a fringe guy. First-rounder, second-rounder, who knows where he's going to end up sitting at. And typically players like that are going to be taken early in the second round where the Bills are kind of powerless to stop that. They have a lot of picks, but it will cost a lot of picks to make trades with drastic range to them. Moving up, for example, like 8 or 9 picks in the first round, that's not really going to, from everything that it seems to be, I don't know if it's going to cost an arm and a leg, but I do think that it's not going to help. But this year, luckily enough, there's not going to be an insane run on quarterbacks to where teams are going to be more willing to wheel and deal. But there you go. That's your weekly version of a mock draft simulator for you on Sports Talk Saturday. Learn them. Love them. Benjamin Morrison, Alfred Collins, Josiah Stewart in round two. Xavier Watts is probably going to be a guy that the Bills would be trading out of the first round, and that would be a great player for them to acquire at that point. I think Watts is screaming early round two. And if the Bills have to get aggressive to jump up and get him, it would cost a decent amount to do so. Kevin Winston Jr. is a guy that I think that the Bills would love to have because he wouldn't have to play right away. And then you can look at a long-term duo of Cole Bishop and Winston on the back end. Benjamin Morrison, like I said, he should be a top 20 guy. I'm buying in on Nate's Notre Dame bias this year because their defense is that disgusting. To have Xavier Watts and Benjamin Morrison within that secondary was a special thing for them to have. That's why they became legitimate contenders. But yeah, when it comes to round two, I'd look at players like Morrison or Darian Porter or maybe even Trey Amos if he slips. Harrison's probably going to go early round two. Ezra Thomas, probably the same thing. If he doesn't make round one, he's going to make early round two. Siobhan Revelle, same thing. If the Bills don't get any of these three corners or they think that they can get someone later on, there are plenty of names that you can end up remembering at that point. Ezaraku from Boston College. Bruce talked me into it. He was already on my list of players that they could be looking at if they were to trade down from round one. But hey, sometimes you get sold on a player. Sometimes you talk to people and you get a different opinion. I still like a player like Shamar Stewart. I think that he's very good. James Pierce is a player that, if he falls, would be fascinating athletically to go ahead and grab. And at safety, of course, I've mentioned Malachi Starks, Nick Emmanuori. But man, to have someone say that he's the Tremaine Edmonds of safeties, oh, that's kind of hurtful. Not like you said, it was in the good ways and in the bad ways. For me, that means he's not going to make enough plays. That's what that translates to. Like, he should make enough plays. Athletically, he has the profile. But what do you think? How much improvement should the Bills make defensively for you to feel comfortable with the draft? How many picks should the Bills pour into their defense? Of the 10 that they have available, what do you go away happy with? I think at least half of your draft class has to be defense. I doubt that they make all 10 picks, so I'm not going to say that it needs to be 6 defensive players. But I should comfortably be able to say 4 or 5 in a draft class of 7 or 8. Mostly because I see a defense that really showed some weaknesses last year. This was the defense that allowed the Kansas City Chiefs to score 30 points for the first time all year. And that offense was, compared to their usual standards, relatively anemic for past Chiefs offenses. But if you can at least collect some talent, then you can, might be able to point to, okay, do they really have something that they have to truly alter within the scheme? But football still, yes, it's leaning toward offense. But you do still need to have a team component here on defense. You do need to still have the other side of the football capable of slowing another team down. And throughout that Kansas City game, plenty of times you're looking at each other or you're looking at anyone that's willing to listen and go, I'm scared that the defense isn't going to keep going. I need to ask for one stop. Is that hard to ask? In certain games, it was this year. You look at LA, you look at Detroit. They had to make at least one stop in order to win or lose those games. Granted, the overall difference from the LA game was a blocked punt, but still, the defense was getting shredded by LA. They get shredded by Detroit as they mount a furious comeback, but the Bills made some stops early in that game. But if the offense wasn't perfect, it's a different tale. If the offense wasn't run by an MVP quarterback, it's a different story. And the AFC East isn't going to be that pathetic again. Mostly because it's hard to be. He says while watching the Patriots dominate the division for nearly two decades. But I need the Bills to continue improving their defensive front, collect talent. Why? Because Josh Allen is capable of elevating on offense. That doesn't mean you don't help him entirely. I just look at it as a lower priority. That lower priority has to do with the fact that I've seen Josh Allen now do well without a better roster. I've seen the Bills defense fold at times when they had, on paper, the better unit. .503-0550 is the number to call. How many picks do you need the Bills to invest on defense for you to walk away happy? And if you've got some favorite names, well, I'd love to hear them. You guys are hearing me spew out names left and right here. If you've got names, bring them to the table. We'll get connected to our fans. It's brought to you by Northtown Kia, Western New York's number one Kia dealer. Shop online at northtownkia.com. We'll go to Brandon in Batavia. Brandon, how you doing? Welcome to Sports Talk Saturday.
Hey, what's up, man? Thanks for taking my call.
Yeah, thanks for calling in. Yeah, what you got? Brandon, going twice.
Sorry.
Oh, there we go.
I just wanted to comment on the defense.
Mm-hmm.
And just say how I thought Philadelphia really set the blueprint or made the blueprint for how to stop Kansas City and Patrick Mahomes with their heavy front four. And I think the Bills' front four has been kind of disappointing in the last couple of years. So I'm hoping that they can improve on their front four on the defensive side of the ball and get more pressure up the middle when they play Kansas City or some of these top-tier teams.
Brandon, I appreciate the call. And I will point out, throughout the season, Philadelphia had less sacks than Buffalo. But it's as you mentioned, Brandon, it was kind of a blueprint game of sorts. They were creating pressures up the middle, and that's where Zach and I looked at each other this offseason and said, defensive tackle, that's the way we got to invest heavily in this, right? It's got to be. And that's pretty much where we're at this point. Invest a high pick in round one or round two. I'm not picky. I don't need it to be the team's first pick. But I do need it to be within the first two rounds. And if you get that, with the depth of the defensive tackle class, you're getting a starter. This D tackle class is that good that if you just use any of your first three picks on one of them, you're probably getting a starter. You find a guy who's the right fit, a fierce one-tech defensive tackle, you get him in there, and you make it right. You create space for Ed Oliver, who then can use his aggression in his favor. You get a space eater like this to free up Terrell Bernard. You add a pass rusher because it's also a good draft for that, because Joey Bosa is only on a one-year deal. You look like you need some help at corner. Definitely invest in that. Go away happy this year. Satisfied that you helped your defense and that roster help them make more of a difference. The only way you can combat how the how the league has trended, is collect the talent. Put it together. And then, for once, be able to have an opportunity to go, all right, we got an equalizer here. Because over the past few years, Kansas City's defense has been why they've made it to the Super Bowl. Kansas City's defense is the reason that teams have slowed down against them, especially last year. Kansas City loses all of two football games, technically one, in the regular season because their defense is playing on an otherworldly level. Kansas City had not scored 30 points all year. Over 30 points all year, I should say. And in the playoffs, it was the same miserable football that you were watching from the Chiefs. They figured it out. The Bills need to have that figured out too. Move on to the other side here. Coming back, we'll talk with Trevor Howard as the Buffalo Bandits are in action tonight with an opportunity to stop a skid, staying in control, and try to keep the inside track on the first overall seed in the NLL. Sports Talk Saturday rolls on the other side. You're listening to WGR.
College holds a mythic place in American culture. On the new Campus Files podcast, we uncover the scandals you won't hear on the campus tours. Find Campus Files on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Here's Dane Smith taking a twirl, top of the slot, burn with a drive. Hit the goal post, Dane scores. Buffalo, first time taking the lead, 10-9.
John Gertler on the call. Unfortunately, the Bandits did not escape with a win over the last two games. Most recently, 13-12, they fall to the Vancouver Warriors last week at KeyBank Center. So the Bandits are sliding right now ever since they've had an opportunity to clinch a home playoff game. And to ask a little bit of what's up with the Bandits, as well as get ourselves a little bit of a preview for tonight, we've got our own Trevor Howard joining us here on the West Shore Hotline. Trevor, welcome
back
in.
How are you?
Welcome back into another Saturday, and third time's the charm?
Third time is a charm indeed. It is very, very simple here for the Buffalo Bandits tonight as they face against the Colorado Mammoth at Ball Arena at 9 p.m. faceoff. A win, you are in. And by in, I mean home quarterfinal matchup for the Buffalo Bandits. It's that simple.
Trevor, when it comes down to it, ever since they've had this opportunity to clinch a first-round playoff game, it has not gone pretty for them. And, I mean, yes, not gone pretty as in you have lost a couple of games by a total of two goals. But it has been just a little bit tough of like, ah, man, they're not the same team that we saw at the start of the season, which was unrealistic to expect anyway. But it does look like they've kind of fallen back to earth a little bit as they're tied for first place overall in the NLL.
Yeah, and I think definitely it's a lot of the league that's just figuring them out right now. You know, ever since jumping off to the 7-0 start, the Buffalo Bandits have gone 4-4 since then. And you know, you can look at it for a couple different reasons. Maybe they're not as creative as they were throughout the first 7 weeks of the season. You know, some of the teams have found out how to shut down some of the top dogs like Dane Smith and Josh Byrne, having to leave Kyle Buchanan and Chase Fraser and Teoka Nanacoke to score all the goals for the Bandits. And, you know, once you get those top two guys locked up, it's going to be hard to really open up the playbook and get creative and create central plays around those guys. But, I mean, you did mention it, Derek. You only lost by one goal in those two games, but they do appear to be on a little bit of a skid right now. So we will see what happens tonight. But there are two different scenarios tonight if the Bandits were to clinch a home field playoff. First one, like I mentioned before, all they need to do is win in Colorado. Or, this is when it gets kind of crazy, a Vancouver loss they're facing against Albany, plus a San Diego loss they're facing against Halifax, and plus a Georgia loss they are facing against Philadelphia. So the Bandits either need to win tonight to clinch a home quarterfinal matchup, or if they lose, Vancouver needs to lose, San Diego needs to lose, and Georgia needs to lose.
Trevor, when it comes down to it, though, the Bandits themselves would just like to get off the schneid and get over these two one-goal losses that they've had to incur. When it comes down to it, though, the Bandits, they still are one of the top scoring teams in lacrosse. They still have Matt Vincent net. So it does look like they're still in relatively good hands. It is just a matter of let's get these close losses and just turn them into wins.
Yeah, you know, you still have one of the best teams on paper in the National Lacrosse League. You mentioned Matt Vince. He's one of the top goaltenders, despite even his age. I think he's 42 years old at this time. But, I mean, they have some of the most top-talented guys in this league, all on the same team. And in order to just get off the deck, sometimes for the Bandits over the past couple of years, it's just been the calendar switch from March to April. They've known to go on a little bit of a slide in the month of March. And then when the calendar switches to April, the snap of a finger, they go, okay, it's time to play now. Then they get hot going into the playoffs, and then you start to see the Bandits that we're usually typical of seeing around this time of year.
Trevor, when it comes down to it, though, not only do they still have Matt Vince, they still have the duo in Dane Smith and Josh Byrne, where here they are, sitting there at 1-3 overall in scoring now, with a game even in hand on Rochester's Connor Fields. Dane Smith now leading the league at 111. Byrne in third place at 108. And again, they have a game in hand on Rochester's Connor Fields in that scenario. So here we are, ho-hum again, with the Bandits threatening to have 1-2 in the scoring lead once more.
It is just, it's so unbelievable to think about that. You know, we can sit on here and talk about how the league has kind of figured out Josh Byrne and Dane Smith, and they're still top three in the league as far as overall points are concerned. When you look at, you know, maybe the Albany game or maybe the Vancouver game, and you see Josh Byrne and Dane Smith have about 6 or 7 points apiece, that's sort of a down night for them. You know, we're used to seeing Josh and Dane getting like 10, maybe 11, 12, 13 points a night. So when they only get held to like 6 or 7 points, it almost kind of seems like a down night, maybe an off night for them because they're so, so talented. And I do have to mention this, checking some of the Twitter over the past week for the National Lacrosse League, Chris Cloutier, forward for the Buffalo Bandits, has been placed on the injury reserve. We are now seeing the little scrappy rookie, Clay Scanlon, is back in the lineup for the Buffalo Bandits. So good news and bad news there. We don't like, you know, not watching Chris Cloutier play. He's got one of the best sidearm shots in the National Lacrosse League. But to take his place, you get to see a young and flashy upcoming rookie for the Bandits, Clay Scanlon, who not only scores, but could also lay the boom. He's a big, big physical threat.
Scanlon already has 11 points in his first 8 games as a Bandit. And yeah, I was going to mention that with Cloutier being put on injured reserve there. So it looks like there's going to be a little bit of the depth tested here for the Bandits. But it does look like with the team that they do have, it is just going to be, you got to keep the stars continuing to shine here in Dane Smith, Josh Byrne, Matt Vince doing their thing and making sure that they continue to thrive for this team.
And it really comes down to fundamentals, especially around this time of year. A lot of what we saw last week, a lot of the key reasons why the Bandits did not come away with the win last week is they were trying to get the pretty goal. You know, take shots from all angles, you know, keep the goalie on his toes. You don't have to go for the point blank shot. You know, you can shoot from all angles, keep the goalie on his toes, have him guessing every single shot that you make. That is when the Bandits are most dominant. That is what we saw through the first 7 weeks. But Colorado, I know that we did mention some injuries with the Buffalo Bandits, but Colorado's missing some key players too. Eli McLaughlin actually went back to Canada, and now he is a firefighter there, fun fact. So he will not be playing for the rest of the season as he's going back home to serve his country, which is, you know, good for Eli McLaughlin. Also looking at Zed Williams, a Salamanca kid, grew up a Buffalo Bandits fan, is out of the lineup as well. He is a player that absolutely destroys the Bandits every single time that they play them, but he has a torn Achilles, so he is out for the rest of the season. Some of the key players that you want to watch are Ryan Leaf, absolutely for sure. You want to look at players like Connor Kelly, who can get in your face. He's a big physical guy. But so it's not just the Bandits who are injured right now. Colorado's got some injuries too, but their head coach, Pat Coyle, going up against John Tavares, you know, those are, if you combine their IQ points to the level of the sport, it's going to probably go above 1,000. Those are two very, very intelligent individuals. And, it's going to be a back-and-forth type of battle that we're used to seeing between these two teams.
Bandits against Colorado, a 9 o'clock faceoff tonight. You'll be able to hear that over on our sister station, The Bet 1520. the Bandits having an opportunity to clinch a first-round home playoff game and an opportunity to rebound from back-to-back losses here against Colorado tonight. I will say, though, the good news is they're on the road where they've only lost one time this year. They've actually had their problems at home this year with three losses at home. They're 6-1 on the road through this season.
That one loss on the road was in overtime. Mm-hmm. So it's not even a regulation loss. You know, it was that behind-the-back goal in overtime against Albany that Dyson Williams scored. And, you know, the Bandits have been proven that they are the road warriors this year. So that is kind of where they've been clicking the best. You know, they've been playing some of their best games on the road. Saskatchewan, you know, facing against one of the tough teams, they had the head-to-head tiebreaker against them. They beat them 9-7 in their barn. Very, very tough place to win. Also, the Calgary game. You know, everyone knows about the Saddle Dome. It's tough to win games in there. And the Bandits won 11-6 over the Calgary Roughnecks in the Saddle Dome. So if they want to keep this trend continuing with their road success, Ball Arena, a.k.a. the Loud House in Denver, Colorado, should be on their radar. Hey, we have to win here, especially Saskatchewan losing last night. That could really, you know, not only is it great for the Bandits to clinch their number one seed and, you know, the home field advantage sort of thing, but when you see the team right behind you in the standings drop and lose last night, you want to take advantage of that if you're a Buffalo Bandits player.
Not to mention, Trevor, I looked at everything throughout the whole season, though. The Bandits, they have four losses on the year. Three of them, though, you mentioned the overtime loss against Albany, so obviously that has to be by one goal. And these past two games, they have been one-goal losses. So three of their four losses this year have only been by one goal. So the Bandits, if they're not winning a game, they are still threatening to be within it up until the final seconds.
And they're absolutely still threatening, but what it comes down to is you have some of those quarters in those losses, maybe by a goal, where the Bandits don't score at all. So the difference could be if the Bandits score, let's just say, one goal in the second quarter instead of zero, we could be looking at overtime or a regulation win. That's sort of all that it really comes down to. And, you know, we've seen the Bandits play consistently 45-minute games this year. And by that, I mean they score in all three quarters except for that one. And the theme is either the second or third quarter that's been giving them struggles and maybe some nightmares in there too. But Vancouver, they scored one goal in the second, and then I think up until the 8-minute mark of the third is when they scored their next goal after that. So they can't really afford to go on these 15-minute, you know, we're just going to lay back. No, you have to attack all four quarters because that's really all what it comes down to. If the Bandits had just one better quarter than some of these other teams, we could already be looking at the number one seed locked up.
Trevor Howard joining us here on the Western Hotline. Bandits at Colorado tonight, 9 o'clock. I've been wondering about his season a lot this year. Ian McKay, 30 goals on the year for the transition player who is now being asked to do a lot more offensively, is putting the ball in the net.
Yeah, I mean, he and the role that he plays on this team is fantastic. You know, he's either playing defense if someone goes down with an injury. We've already seen a couple times this year some of the Bandits defensemen are either taking a 5-minute major penalty, so they're sitting in the box for a while, or they're on the injury reserve. So we have to see Ian McKay play back there. This guy scores a lot of goals too. We've had a couple games this year already where he's potted in 5 in one game. I always go back to that Ottawa game where he just went absolutely berserk against the Ottawa Black Bears. But then he also scores out of transition too. So he's everywhere out there on the floor, the ultimate Swiss Army knife on your team. And look out for him to play a big night in Colorado. He's had some very, very good success over the past couple years against the Mammoth. They don't really seem to have a real significant answer for him. You know, you can even go back to the 2023 finals. He was one of the main reasons why they took out the Mammoth there in that crucial game 3 in the best 2 out of 3 series to win that game 13-4. I think he had more than 5 assists that night, and a lot of those goals that they were scoring were off of the transition breakout from Ian McKay. So he's extremely important to this team, extremely important in this game coming up against the Mammoth team who are 8-6, but we've seen over the course of this season, the Bandits, when they go up against some of the 500 level teams, they do start to struggle. So it's going to be an interesting game.
Trevor, Appreciate it as always. And I got to sneak a draft question in here. My brain has fully committed now to it.
Yeah.
You are a Colts fan. And you do plenty with us behind the scenes for the Buffalo Bills Radio Network as well. But do you have a position that the Colts are looking at here within the first round of the draft that you're hoping that they go ahead and get?
You know what, Derek? I think it should be a layup for the Colts, but if they're going to do it, I don't really know. I want to go with Tyler Warren from Penn State at tight end at 14th overall, see what they do, because if you look at some of the weapons that the Colts are using out there, they don't really have a lot of hands as far as the tight end position, and they kind of let it was a good mix of Anthony Richardson and Joe Flacco, but they were getting absolutely destroyed there in the backfield. I think you need a good tight end with a pair of hands, and that can block. I think Tyler Warren from Penn State should be a layup, but you know Chris Ballard. You know the Indianapolis Colts. They are prone to be trading back in the draft. So I'm cautiously optimistic that they take my tight end king, Tyler Warren, out of Penn State.
Warren and Colson Loveland, too. So it's a pretty good first round for tight ends, it looks like. There's a pair of players that do look like they can be first round notable players.
And you want these young guys, especially quarterbacks, to stick around. You want Anthony Richardson to thrive. Give him a safety valve,
Yep. Please.
I think Tyler Warren is that guy.
Trevor, I'll see you around here, and thanks for joining in as always.
Thank you, sir. Anytime. Appreciate you.
That's Trevor Hauer on the West Her Hotline. Again, Bandits at Colorado, 9 o'clock tonight. You'll hear that game on our sister station, the Bet 1520, after the UB women's team taking on Troy for the NIT championship at Alumni Arena. That will also be on our sister station, the Bet 1520. I'll talk with Jack Cruiser at the top of the hour here on Sports Talk Saturday. Derek Kramer, Evans on the board. This is WGR. Last segment of hour number two. Heading to the books here on Sports Talk Saturday. Derek Kramer here with you. As I will say, it's getting fun to really crack the knuckles preparing for the NFL draft. It's a certain poison that happens in my brain that I need at this time of year. And I feel like I need it, though, because I'm like Bane in Batman. I need like that venom serum just like injected into my veins because, I have to be here all weekend. I'm going to be working. So there is a certain amount of madness that I do need to inject into my bloodstream. Because if I don't, I'm not going to know what the hell I'm talking about now.
Then the Bills trade with the Chiefs again.
Look, I'm embracing the very real possibility that they do this to us again. Not particularly with the Chiefs, but they are going to trade out of the first round again. I have a genuine belief in my heart of hearts that there is I'd call it a 40% chance that the three of us and Nate, Zach, and I, we're going to sit here throwing our arms up in the air and going, what the hell? It happened again. And I'm perfectly okay with that. Except if I'm okay with that, I'm not going to be throwing my hands up in the air now, am I? I'm going to just laugh this time if they do it again. If they do it 2 years in a row, that's genuinely funny. But I also think that there's such depth within the defensive portion of this draft this year that they can afford to do it. There are a lot of players that everyone's looking at as like fringe one and round two guys that scream Buffalo Bills, not just to me, but to many people. It almost makes sense this year to trade down. But that said, there's also ample opportunity with the ammunition that they have to trade up as well. One thing I know that the Bills like to do, though, is they like to get themselves back into the third round. They don't have a third-round pick right now that was traded for Amari Cooper for the rest of the season. Granted, it didn't work out for all parties, but you know what? You try. But the Bills are very fond of that idea of trading back into the third round using that pick. I would imagine they have an early fourth-rounder. That would be a good opportunity to do so. And they'll find a way at some point. But when it comes to day one, yeah, I'm ready for it. I'm ready for the trade down. I've braced for it. I've not fully embraced it, but I'm prepared. I'm ready. I'm ready for it again. To be sitting here up until midnight and have no selections to talk about. But that said, Friday night was really fun to come in and just like, hey, pick 33, they're right at it, let's go. That was genuinely fun. It's not a position that you're often in, especially with the Bills winning ways. But my madness, my draft madness has to take a seat here because the UB women are playing for the NIT championship tonight at Alumni Arena. What's that mean? Well, that means I'm going to talk to Bulls play-by-play commentator Jack Kruiser coming up next here on Sports Talk Saturday. This is WGR.